Hello, it's Thursday 26th of November. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauman from Check-In Asia.
On this week's show, we're pleased to chat with Jason Rowland, the editor-in-chief of Champomyang Lao magazine, Laos Airlines in-flight magazine, senior partner RDK Group, and previous country manager Laos for Exo Travel, Kiri Group, and Buffalo Tours, and all-round Laos expert. Phew. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. Today, it's our great pleasure to talk all things travel and tourism in Laos with Jason Rowland, editor-in-chief of Champomyang Lao magazine and senior partner RDK Group. Jason, thanks for being on the show. How are you doing and where are you today?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm here in our office in Vientiane, Laos.
Nice. So I'll get started with the first question then, Jason. And I think this is the question that I'm dying to know. I don't know about Gary. So you've been in Laos for, well, years, I think. So what took you there in the first place and why did you stay?
I am actually from Texas, but you probably can't hear it from my accent. I had just graduated university and was working in a bookstore. It was sort of the job I had through university. So I just sort of stayed on thinking that some other opportunities would present themselves. I graduated in international business, and I was also in charge of the travel book section. So it really made me dream about being somewhere else. So after a few years of that, I realized that I was still young and wanted to see the world a bit more. And so I thought I might just pack up and move to Thailand to teach English or do something like that. I told my family and they were like, why Thailand? And I said, well, that's because it's the farthest place from Texas.
When was that, Jason? What year? That was
in about 2003, 2004, yeah.
You've had a bunch of different roles in Thailand and Laos over the past 15 or 16 years. Just give us a bit of a quick catch up.
Sure. Well, I mentioned the idea of moving to Thailand to a friend at the bookstore, and she said, hold on, I have a friend with a tour company in Thailand. And so she set us up and I was hired and moved out sight unseen. I'd never been here before. And the company I started to work in had an office in Thailand and also one in Luang Prabang in Laos. And so after a few years in Thailand, I moved up to manage the office in Luang Prabang. And since then, that company was taken over by Buffalo Tours. Then I moved to Trails of Indochina in Bangkok and then Kiri Travel in Vientiane. And then finally to Exo Travel in Laos.
A lot of the big boys.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's only a couple I haven't hit yet. So maybe in the future.
There's still time.
Yeah. And then during this time also, a group of friends here in Vientiane, we sort of started a small translation company because we were all pretty much bilingual by then, called RDK Group. Mm-hmm. This sort of grew up over time and we ended up doing the subtitles for the Hollywood films that were showing at the cinemas here, translating them into Lao. And then since then, we've sort of grown into sort of a media services company. And now we're also publishing Champomyang Lao, the magazine for Lao Airlines.
Is it unusual for many Americans to be able to speak Lao? Are you one of the few? Are you famous for it?
I do have a little bit of renown, but I wouldn't say I'm the best, but I'm sort of at the top of the game, yeah.
But you're a bit of a linguist, Jason. You studied Russian, is that correct?
That's correct. Growing up in Texas, we all started studying Spanish when we were in kindergarten. And then in high school, I switched to French. Then in university, I minored in Russian just because I thought that would make me a little bit more marketable. Mm-hmm. I didn't end up actually working in Russia and ended up in Asia, where Lao and Thai languages have sort of taken over all the Indo-European space in my brain.
And how did you find learning those two languages?
It wasn't so difficult, actually. Thai was, I was living in a place in northeastern Thailand where there weren't very many English speakers anyway. And so it was mostly just sink or swim.
Having gone a little bit into your background there, Jason, obviously what we really want to know more and more about is what's happening in Laos and the travel and tourism front. And obviously this year, it's been such a difficult year for everybody. We've had this pandemic. But Laos has recorded so few cases. So what's been the popular perception about the virus and its impact on the economy and on travel in general?
Well, in Laos, we were really fortunate that as soon as a case was discovered, the country totally shut down. Borders were closed, flights were canceled. So sort of stranding people on both sides of the borders. The government at that time encouraged everyone to work from home and schools were also shut. People were only allowed outdoors for urgent needs like to go shopping or to go to the a medical checkup or something. And this lasted for about 40 days or so, mm-hmm. after which we could start returning to our offices, and domestic flights were also allowed to start flying again, albeit on a very limited schedule because there weren't many tourists in the country. Some tourists and expats stuck in Laos or stuck outside of Laos were allowed to leave or return to the country by charter flights that would go flying to Seoul or Kuala Lumpur or Bangkok. And so people returning to Laos are immediately placed in a quarantine. Another thing is Laos also has a very large migrant population working in Thailand as laborers and other things. So they all started to return too as soon as the country was shutting down. So they were allowed to cross back into Laos and immediately put in a state quarantine as well. So through these measures, we haven't had a locally transmitted case of COVID since, I want to say, about mid-April. Mm-hmm. Everything, all the COVID cases that we've detected have all been from returnees or people visiting, coming in on the charter flights.
And what's daily life like there now? I mean, you're in Vientiane. I think last week you were traveling to Luang Prabang. What's daily life like?
Daily life is really pretty much normal. No one is wearing masks anymore. They haven't for quite some time. Shops are open, restaurants are open. The only thing that's different is that there aren't tour buses driving around. Hotels are practically empty, except for a few quarantined people. And so in really heavily touristed cities like Luang Prabang, that looks like a really sad place. It looks like a ghost town right now.
Right. Are a lot of places shut?
A lot of places in the touristy areas, yes, are shut. Some like hostels and guest houses and things have just totally closed down, waiting. There are even some high-end hotels too that haven't reopened. They're just waiting for international flights to resume.
And is there pressure within the Laos tourism industry to reopen international borders, or are people just kind of afraid they want to wait it out?
There is pressure to reopen, at least to some limited degree, at least to be able to resume maybe some international flights, or at least reopening to borders with some of our neighbors, immediate neighbors. But we had a plan recently, I think it was in May or June, to sort of reopen and begin flights again to Vietnam. But as soon as that was about to happen, Central Vietnam recorded a huge number of cases of COVID, so that plan is totally scrapped. So now the government is really cautious and just sort of waiting a bit. They want to be better safe than sorry.
So I'm guessing, Jason, that during this time you stayed in Laos, you haven't moved. What have you been doing over the past few months?
Indeed. I've been working just as normal, but my business has only been slightly affected, mostly just via the magazine, the in-flight magazine, not being able to produce any sort of international content. We have to focus only on domestic sites in Laos now. If I were still involved directly in tourism operations, then I would be quite a bit worse off. But my company has also been working on ways to help keep tourism stakeholders in business by pushing Lao people to explore more within Laos.
Nice. So is that the Laos Tiao Lao campaign?
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Around the middle of this year, it looked like the reopening of the international borders was still rather uncertain, I guess much like it is today. Tourism businesses were already beginning to blow through whatever cash reserves they had and were furloughing staff and trying to cut costs wherever they could. And so my company was contacted by the Lao National Chamber of Commerce and Industry to help spearhead a campaign to promote domestic tourism. And this was supported by the Skills for Tourism Project, Laos 029, which is funded by Luxembourg Aid and Development and the Swiss Agency for Development Cooperation, who have been really helpful in supporting tourism and hospitality education here in Laos.
Wow, that's fascinating. So what have you been involved in? What kind of projects is that taking you to?
Yeah, well, we've been tasked mainly with handling the online presence for this campaign. So we've developed a Facebook and Instagram page, which is quite popular here in Laos. And we have prizes with donations of hotel rooms and flights from various sponsors. And we have different raffles and different games that people can play on the Facebook page. And people follow it to sort of learn about new places to see as well. We've gotten content from many local travel influencers who have boosted their own marketing through this page as well.
And in terms of domestic tourism there, Jason, you know, how are people traveling? One of the things we found in Malaysia, we can't presently travel domestically in most states here at the moment, but when we could, which we could for about 2 or 3 months, there was this move towards self-drive. You know, people were still a bit fearful of taking domestic flights. What are you seeing in Laos?
I would say in Laos, it's a bit more the opposite. People are free to travel wherever they would like within the country. But typically, Lao people don't travel within Laos historically that much, only to visit family or other special occasions or festivals or events. A majority of Lao people is still in the mentality that if they travel, they want to go abroad to more quote-unquote developed countries like Korea or Japan or Singapore or Thailand. So it's been a process to sort of help redirect the tourism aspirations of the Lao people to help them realize the beauty and possibility of travel within the country.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess, does that go the other way as well? Are a lot of tourism businesses within Laos, you know, previously geared towards international tourists rather than local domestic tourists?
That's quite right. Majority of the tourism businesses here in Laos were focused on either handling Thai market or Chinese market or Vietnamese market. The regional Asian countries were always the biggest portion of the pie here in Laos, whereas the international long-haul European and American tourists were more of the big spenders. So many businesses here are trying to find a way to pivot to handling Lao tourists, who typically don't like to go out independently on their own, like FITs. They would rather go in a group with a lot of people and, you know, have fun and have everything sort of taken care of.
That's quite interesting. So in a way, actually, that's almost better for the industry than if they preferred to go as FIT, because presumably then there's more business that you can get.
Yes and no. The other issue is that Lao salaries are also quite low comparatively to regional Asians and international long-haul tourists. So the buying power is also quite low as well. Mm. And their ability to be able to take time off or have enough money on hand, especially during the COVID time, to be able to go anywhere is also restricted.
Yeah, now you say that, yes. pros and cons, right? Yeah.
Yes.
how I met you originally is because you were running a Facebook group for tourism professionals in Laos. Is the industry there pretty well coordinated? You know, are there associations which are lobbying the government for aid, for stimulus measures?
The industry in Laos is not very monolithic. There is a Lao Association of Travel Agents and also a Lao Hotel and Restaurant Association. These are usually a bit more prominent in the larger cities, whereas most of the tourism businesses out in farther afield are family-run places that don't really have a background in tourism. There's also a tourism sector working group at the Lao National Chamber of Commerce, which is made up of some really dedicated business owners who have been really successful in raising some concerns with the government about relief efforts and trying to get assistance during this period.
And has there been much government assistance for tourism businesses?
Not yet. Mm. We're still hopeful. Yep.
Jason, one of the things we wanted to talk to you about is ecotourism. Obviously, because of Laos's landscapes, there are so many ecotourism projects. I'll come to that in a minute, though, because I want to come to that after the next segment. And obviously, it's very difficult to talk about travel and tourism in all of Southeast Asia, but particularly Laos, without discussing the Chinese influence. So let's talk a little bit, firstly, about what's been happening in Laos in recent months and years on the constructive side, and particularly transport infrastructure. You've got the high-speed railway there that's going to connect Laos up with Yunnan province in southwest China. You've also got the new Vangvieng Highway. Is this having a dramatic impact on the country?
Yeah, I think that the construction of these projects will only be a boon to the country. But during the construction process, it's really straining the existing infrastructure. Really heavy trucks are reducing our main highways into rubble at the moment. So driving currently on the normal highway to Vangvieng is really a mess and takes really a long time. But the Vangvieng Vientiane Expressway is going to open officially next week. And then after that, I expect a flood of vehicle traffic from Vientiane. It'll reduce traveling time from about 4 hours to about an hour and a half. And there are plans underway already to extend this expressway all the way to the Chinese border.
And let's talk a little bit more about the high-speed railway, because this has obviously been developed over a number of years. It's funded and constructed by Chinese companies. It will use Chinese railway technology. Can you just tell us a little bit more about where it's coming from and where it's going to and the route network through the country?
Yes, the Lao China Railway is also progressing very smoothly, as I can always see its progression as I fly over from airline windows. They plan to open this in next December. They've already begun hiring and training hundreds of Lao staff in order to be able to maintain and operate the train system. They're also getting Chinese language training because they imagine that there will be a lot of Chinese, probably higher managers in the company, as well as Chinese tourists coming in. So they need to be able to communicate. And with so many tourism workers unemployed at the moment, many of them have looked at this as an opportunity to retrain in another field. The railway system itself begins in Vientiane and travels up through Vang Vieng, Luang Prabang, Udomsai, and then the Chinese border. It should only take about 5 or 6 hours, I believe, to reach the border.
And that's due to open, I think you said, what, December 2021, is that correct?
That's correct.
How many years have they been building it?
They've only begun in 2016, I believe. So very fast.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, last year, Lao attracted 1 million tourism arrivals from China, which was the first time. Have you seen then the tourism industry starting to adapt more, kind of getting ready for this influx?
At that time, it was beginning to change a bit. There were more hotels and restaurants and other businesses opening up to cater directly to the Chinese market. But many of these are also run by Chinese people who had come here to set up businesses to cater to these people. So now that there's no Chinese flights, no Chinese tourism, a lot of them have returned home and businesses are mostly closed. These are also built mostly sort of in the more northern half of the country because there were never really any direct flight connections between China and southern Laos. So many Chinese tourists didn't really go there.
Yeah, that's interesting. And this year, of course, was supposed to be, it was dedicated by both governments to be China-Laos tourism year. There were a lot of events and promotions planned throughout the year. Do you think that will roll over into 2021 or 2022?
I think that really all depends on the global situation. It's really too early to tell what will happen next month, let alone next year. And really an effective visit year requires a lot of foresight and preparation. If Laos were really to launch this in 2021, it should have been planned months ago, at least half a year or so. And there should be also a proper reason why people should feel engaged and determined to visit Laos during a certain year. They need to have planned some special events or some other larger marketing campaign rather than just posting Visit Lao Year signs on everything and calling it a job well done.
That's true. I guess the timing would be pretty good if they could implement it at the same time as the railway opens. Like you say, everything is so uncertain right now. They just have to see what happens.
Jason, will you be one of the first passengers on the train?
I would love to. And I wonder if they need a magazine.
Nice. Diversifying.
So let's move back just before that Chinese influence sector. We were going to look a little bit at ecotourism, which obviously is a big opportunity for Laos, but you have had a lot of issues of deforestation. There are a lot of like hydropower plants. Obviously, you've had the disruption of the railway and the highway running through the country. Now, what do you think is the current state of ecotourism in Laos?
Ecotourism has always been going on here in Laos since before I arrived. The Asian Development Bank was one of the leaders, actually, about 20 years ago. They set up an ecotourism project in the Nam Ha National Park up in Luang Nam Tha in the northern Laos, near sort of closer to the Chinese border, to sort of promote tourism in the area. And they promoted trekking trails and kayak trips and things like that. So it's a really good idea, and it drew a lot of people to the area. But earlier than that, there was even a visionary Frenchman throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s named Claude Vincent, who was married to a princess from San Kuang. So he set up this network of charming rustic boutique accommodation in unusual places using local products and furnishings, which were attractive to Western tastes. Unfortunately, he died tragically in 1996. But some of these places still continue on to this day, being run by some of his children. Ecotourism today is still being developed. There's a push right now for a lot of zip lines because that's what Lao people like to do. It's a nice photo opportunity. It's not so difficult. It's more like soft adventure in a way.
So Jason, I mean, obviously this year has been a really tough year for everyone in the tourism industry and in Laos as well in general. I mean, where do you see opportunities for growth?
Yeah, domestic tourists are already traveling quite a bit throughout the country, but they're always traveling to the same places. They're sort of getting tired of going on the same beaten paths, I think. If a town has a certain big festival, everyone in Vientiane will go to that place and try to attend. And then after that, that town is like a ghost town for the next month or two. So a lot of people are also not the most intrepid travelers. So sometimes they're afraid to venture into areas where maybe their friends or family haven't been before. And with our domestic tourism campaign, we're trying to help shed light on more lesser known places in the country to help bring some tourism revenue to these areas as well, because everywhere else, everyone would just go to Phang Vieng and Luo Prabang.
Has that been for you, Jason, quite interesting? One of the learnings of doing this domestic tourism program is just how things change, how people's expectations have changed. You know, this is happening across the region. People can't really travel outside of their countries. I think you're right. You know, there is this kind of boredom of going to the same places, but we have to still generate new ideas to generate growth, to generate travel. Has that been a challenge for you?
There's still so many places in Laos that remain a bit underexplored, especially for the Lao market. Maybe this is due to difficult infrastructure in getting there, or takes a bit of time. But once they do, and they capture that selfie to prove that they were there, that's all that matters.
And where's your favorite spot, Jason?
Oh, don't make me choose.
Top three.
Okay. Well, everyone loves Luang Prabang, so I'll put that on the list. I lived there myself for 5 years, so it still has a soft spot in my heart. I also really, really like Savannakhet in sort of the southern area. It's really overlooked, but full of French colonial charm and kind of a really hip sort of retro vibe. And then other than that, I also really like Sangnua in the northeastern part of the country. It's a rugged area full of karst limestone caves where the Lao government actually set up during the wartime. They were all operating out of the caves to sort of hide from the American bombing during the time.
I'm just going to throw you a bit of a curveball here, Jason. We'll come to the final question in a minute, but you mentioned at the beginning that you're born in Texas, grew up as a Texan. Spending this year of the pandemic in Laos, you know, what kind of responses do you get from family and friends back home? You know, what are their expectations about what your life might be like right now?
They ask me, you know, how I'm doing and everything like that. And I hear stories of how they're doing. And it's like a different world, really. Just being in Laos the whole time, I sort of don't have quite the context to understand what they've been going through in America. Both of my parents and one of my sisters had COVID already. And it's just like, it sounds like a nightmare apocalypse or something over there.
In a normal year, do you go back?
I usually go back once every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, Jason. Even just looking at the UK, I think Gary and I are pretty glad to be in Malaysia still at the moment. And it's nowhere near the levels of the US.
Yeah, it's a right mess.
Did you get to vote, Jason?
I did. Yeah, actually, the postal service in Laos hasn't resumed since March. All our international post is still stuck in Bangkok somewhere due to the lack of international flights. So mailing, we were actually allowed to post through the diplomatic pouch at the U.S. embassy. Voting that way was thankfully allowed.
Yeah, it's the same here in Malaysia. I didn't realize. I tried to send 2 Christmas cards to the UK yesterday, and they told me that international mail was still suspended. I didn't realize that.
Wow.
And so I guess on to our last question then of the interview, Jason. What do you hope for 2021? We're almost there, right? End
yeah,
of November.
Almost there. You know, I really hope that things can normalize a bit, and maybe a travel bubble or two could emerge with some neighboring countries. There has been talk of Laos beginning one with either Vietnam or China, or maybe both. But the government, as I said before, is really cautious, and they don't want any imported cases and blowback from the Lao people about importing more cases than absolutely necessary. Traditionally, Thai tourism to Laos was actually our largest market. So even a travel bubble with Thailand could really also help release a lot of pent-up Thai travel demand. They would be able to come explore Laos as well, and bring some outside revenue to the country again. I mean, truthfully, a zero COVID case situation in Laos isn't really plausible without totally just strangling the tourism industry here.
And do you think that if there were a travel bubble set up with one of those 3 countries that you mentioned or another country, do you think that there would be quite strong demand to travel outbound as well as demand for coming into Laos?
Definitely. There definitely would be. when Lao people travel, they like to go shopping. They like to go to beaches and that sort of thing, which things we don't have as much of here in Laos. So there will be definitely some demand for that. But there will also be the fear too that if they travel out to one of these countries, something happens and then the border is shut again and it's stuck.
Dealing with trying
to get back.
Yeah, I think that's a fear for many, you know, across Southeast Asia. I think there's that everybody knows or has seen somebody, haven't they, on their social media that got stuck and are still there. Even Gary, one of your colleagues, right, is still stuck in Australia, and she traveled out from China in March or something, was it?
Yeah, for Chinese New Year. Yeah, still there. Yeah.
Wow.
Just insane.
But it's an interesting point that you mentioned there, Jason. I think we've been talking about this for months, really, is that there is this pent-up demand for travel. We see it and we read about it in these travel sentiment surveys. But it's going to be different when people are actually able to travel overseas, over borders again. And whether, you know, that pent-up demand actually means people will travel, you know, once you give them the ability, will they feel slightly different to do so when the virus is still around?
I think that Lao people will look at the situation in those countries as well, too, and see what the history and the past experience with the virus has been, especially if we reopen to, say, Thailand or something. Northeastern Thailand was always a huge shopping destination for Lao people, just popping over the border on a weekend to, you know, stock up on things and buy clothes and this and that, and then coming back. So I think that would immediately resume if that happened. A vaccine or two would also help things.
Yeah, right. Definitely. So that brings us to the end of this edition of the Southeast Asia Travel Show. So thank you so much, Jason. We've really enjoyed hearing what's going on in Laos.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Love to talk again.
Yeah, it was great, Jason. Yes. Thanks for your insights. That was fascinating.
Cheers.
So for our listeners, you know, as always, we'd love to hear your feedback on what we said or missed out. So you can email us at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com, and you can look out for our daily travel insights and podcast news on LinkedIn at the Southeast Asia Travel Show and Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue of shows on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com. And some great news this week. We are now on Apple Podcasts. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each one.
Yes, so that's a wrap for this week. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.